This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
By the Book on BFM 89.9.
Hello and welcome to By the Book. I'm Sharmila Ganesan, and as always, my fellow traveler into the realm of reading, Li Chui Lin.
Hello.
And this is our monthly book club. And joining us today, we have Fung Minhan, one of the purveyors of the beautiful lit books. How are you, Minhan?
Hello. Thank you very much, Sharmila.
Thank you for joining us today to discuss what is actually a rather complicated book, as it turned out to be.
Complicated, but also very attention-grabbing. I mean, yes. I think it's worth saying that this is one of those books that's landed with a bit of a pop culture splash. It's one that a lot of people have been talking about, and it's Convenience Store Woman, Sayaka Murata. And I think complicated because it's a slim book. The covers that we're looking at are very pretty and Instagram-friendly.
Yeah, very Instagrammable.
Yeah.
And then, so they come in three different colors. And yes, everyone's been Instagramming them. Did you, Minhan?
Well, actually, as a bookseller, we were approached by the distributors to really splash out on this particular title because it came with a huge marketing and PR plan. And we got it about a year ago and it sold out almost immediately, and we've restocked ever since. And even now it still sells well because I think it's just such an intriguing title. Why would you want to read about a convenience store woman? And the Japanese convenience store is probably one of those things of popular culture that everybody knows about.
And once you read it, did you think that it lived up to that? So to me, the reason I'm asking is that because for me, there's a big disconnect between that fairly candy-colored covers and pop culture vibe to what the story actually turned out to be. Did you have that same experience?
Yes, I think it turned out to be a more thoughtful and darker story than I imagined it to be.
Darker is really the operative word here because I was really misled by, look, let me just read you some of the blurbs. Irresistibly quirky, exhilaratingly weird and funny, as intoxicating as a sake mojito. Mm. And it's like, that makes it sound, you know, just frothy and easy. And it is an easy read. We should say that. It's very slim.
And very engaging read as well.
Yes, yeah. It flies by, but it is not, I mean, who wrote these things? It's really, the content of the book does not match the cover. This is one of those truly kind of strange ones. Should we talk a little bit about what the book actually is about?
Yes, I mean, I think that is an important part of the book. So it is about it literally is about a convenience store woman, as the title says. It's about a young woman, well, not so young. She was young when she started working at a convenience store. Her name is Keiko. Mm-hmm. And essentially, she's someone who is sort of out of step in many ways with the rest of what modern Japanese society expects of people her age and of her social standing to be. And her greatest sort of joy and almost purpose seems to be working as a convenience store woman. Did I get it? Is there more that I'm struggling, guys?
I think that's a really good summary of what it's about. I mean, we're told very early on that her sensibilities are not quite the same as a normal person. And I use the term normal very advisedly because we've had a discussion about this and it's going to be really tricky. And of course, I think it's about her trying to fit into society because in Japanese society, which is famously homogenous, everybody has a role to play. And the convenience store position is usually one reserved for people fresh out of college or in between jobs. It's not something that you make a career out of. Mm-hmm. But after almost 20 years as a convenience store worker, our protagonist, Keiko, seems to be turning into a career.
Beyond that, I think one of the things that really came through for me, and I was thinking about it after, and perhaps it's because towards the latter half of the book, there is this emphasis on being an animal, thinking of oneself not as a person, but as an animal. And I felt like I was reading a book about underwater life. And maybe that's also because there is the comparison drawn to an aquarium, comes through very often in the book. But it felt like I was listening to a starfish describing being a starfish. It felt very much like that. You know, about somebody who just wants to internalize her surroundings, who so badly wants to be a part of her chosen surroundings, which in this case is the convenience store.
I created the main character in Convenience Woman exactly as a logical thinker.
It was a character that I depicted. She knows she's not wrong. She's not wrong, and she was just going to go her way. She thinks if something is dead, might as well just eat it. It makes complete sense to her. If everybody tells me I need a lover, I'll just go find somebody. I'll pick a man, feed it, keep it in the apartment. This is logic to her, completely efficient.
Every time she leaves that setting, and it happens from time to time where she visits fleetingly her friends, her sister, there is this entire out-of-stepness where you see this dissonance between how people are talking to her mm-hmm. and how she's responding. But when she's in the convenience store shouting good morning, you know, telling yep. you to get a croquette.
And knowing exactly when the sausages need to be restocked or when the chocolate milk needs to be put in the fridge. It's like she belongs, like she's
a happy
completely
starfish.
A part of yes yeah. yeah and I think the other thing that perhaps needs to be pointed about the book is that we're sort of dropped into it at a point when she's questioning or being made to question whether the choices that she's made and where she is right now is where she should be. Should she be getting married? Should she be doing more with her life? And that's kind of where we meet Keiko almost.
Exactly, because she is essentially a person without an identity. In fact, very early on, we're told that when she first encounters the convenience store in her teens, late teens, this is when she finally becomes a full-fledged person, mm-hmm. Which is very different from what you would expect from a regular person. So, but of course, because she is unusual, because she is that outsider, and in fact, she is described as an outsider and as an outcast by everyone else around her, I don't think she's entirely unhappy with her life. In fact, I think she's quite content with it.
Yeah, I get the sense that she's actually not unhappy at all. She's happy being who she is.
Exactly. But for whatever reason, she feels like maybe I should give normal a try. You know, there isn't a very strong argument as to why she should or why she should not. It almost seemed as though it were an experiment to her. Mm. I'm going to try being normal and see how I like it.
So I chalked that up to the beginning where they do like a flashback to when she was a kid, where she goes through several incidences that kind of teach her that people who don't follow that straight and narrow get punished in various ways.
Yeah.
That bad things happen to them. And so she decides that just for convenience sake to not get into trouble, that she should try to be quote unquote normal.
That's really interesting. I hadn't considered that because it links up to the second character that we haven't talked about, who is just this awful.
I don't know what else. Mixing words there.
Yeah, it's just, look, he's just terrible. I'm looking for his name, Shiraha.
I agree that he's a completely awful character, and I'm often asked if he is modeled after anybody in my life, and I must say that he brings together all the awfulness in the world. What I did was I collected every possible awful characteristic of Japanese men and crystallized it and created Shiraha.
And so there's just this awful person, this awful man who kind of enters the convenience store setting and has very specific views of men and women and of society and has this constant reference to the village because he believes, I suppose, that humanity just fundamentally hasn't changed since the Stone Age. He keeps talking about that and how, you know, men need to be strong and women need to be essentially supplicants at the feet of the strong. And he goes on about that when he himself, of course, is described as very physically weak, which is also an interesting thing. But he talks about being banished from the village. So it's interesting that you bring up this idea of punishment because I guess she's been taught early on that at a certain point she might be punished. Mm-hmm. And so when she meets somebody who goes on and on about, listen, if you continue the way you are, you will be punished by being banished. So maybe that's the argument that you were talking about earlier, Minhan.
Yeah, actually. And in fact, Shiraha, he goes into all these monologues all the time
about
the state of the world and how it's a terrible place. And I think this one particular paragraph, I think, captures his view on the world. He writes, "The normal world has no room for exceptions and always quietly eliminates foreign objects. Anyone who is lacking is disposed of. So that's why I need to be cured. Unless I'm cured, normal people will expurgate me."
Mm.
Actually, I'm sorry. I think that's actually from Keiko, not necessarily from Shiraha.
Shiraha.
And
So that quote was from Keiko.
That was from Keiko. But I think this was after she'd met him and she starts to internalize some of his weird philosophies.
Mm. Internalize is a good word to describe for Keiko, though, because she also spends a lot of time literally internalizing speech patterns and behaviors. And she talks about that to the reader, I suppose. She tells you that that's what she's doing. She actively says, I'm mixing speech patterns and I'm checking shoe labels to see what shoes I should buy. And, you know, there is this active attempt to fit in. But again, you're right. There is no strong argument ever for doing it one way or the next beyond this sort of vague understanding that I am supposed to, therefore I shall.
So the contrast to that for me is the internalizing that she does almost without thinking about it of the convenience store itself. Because really, that's the only thing that seems to be where she feels she fits. Because she talks about how her entire life is the convenience store. The clothes she wears are largely the uniform. The food she consumes, the things that she puts in her home, they're all from the convenience store. And she literally internalizes them, right?
Everything she does for her health is in service of the convenience store.
Yes.
And she explicitly says that.
Like, she says that she can't continue working long hours standing up if she doesn't take care of her health. So to me, I feel like there's that two kinds of that internalizing, right? The conforming forced version that makes her be, again, quote unquote, normal. And then there's the other kind that happens really organically, which she's fine with because she's actually fine being part of the convenience store.
I think she's actually proud to be part of the convenience store. It's her raison d'etre. The only reason for her being is because of the convenience store. In fact, later on in the book, when her colleagues start gossiping about her personal life and things like that, she's completely indignant. And she says that you're downgrading me from being a convenience store worker to become a regular human person. As if being a convenience store worker was somehow superior to being a regular human person, which is the exact diametric opposite of what we would think.
So we do need to take a break, but we will continue talking about Sayaka Murata's Convenience Store Woman. Let us know if you've read it or if you have thoughts, if you plan to read it.
Are we enticing you to read it at all?
So you can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Or you can write us at buythebook@bfm.my.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back. You're listening to Buy the Book with me, Sharmila, my co-host Lynn. And joining us today for our special book club episode is Minhan from Lit Books.
Hello.
And we are talking about Convenience Store Woman by Sayaka Murata, which if you heard the first part of our show, is a lot more complicated than the book might look.
I wanted to ask you guys whether you liked her. So I know that this is not necessarily the most politically correct question to ask about a character for whom liking seems to be both desired and not, for whom liking seems to be both a part of life and not. I get that, but I also think that my experience of reading this book is somewhat affected by how I feel about the character, which I think is meant to be that way. It's supposed to elicit that kind of reaction. And yeah, I just wanted to kind of raise that question of comfort with Keiko. Like, do we like her? Do we like being in her company?
I think I'm very sympathetic towards her, but whether I like her or not, I'm not really sure, to be honest. She's probably not someone I would like to hang out with. Does that make sense?
Mm. Yes. 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 Especially if you saw a spade nearby and if you read the book. It's just, oof.
So I liked her. I liked her as a character. Again, distinction between perhaps someone in my life. I liked her because she was so interesting. In fact, one of my grouses with the book is that it feels like it doesn't give us enough. I want to know so much more about her. I want to know how the people in her life feel about her. I want to know how she grew up. Like, I could read an entire book about her as a child and teenager. So I guess that means I find her terribly fascinating.
So, if she was from Keiko's side, she would see the demon.
I wrote the novel with two cameras in mind. One camera from Keiko's perspective, the other from all other humans, normal human beings. And from the normal side, Keiko looks abnormal. They judge her through that lens, though she does nothing wrong. From Keiko's side, the normal people are the ones that look monstrous. And I wrote the novel thinking that we could all question this monster of what we call normalcy, the norm. And if I myself met somebody like Keiko, I find myself thinking, would I tell her? Go get a real job, go interview, go get benefits, you'll get paid days off. And I would push the need, I would push the normalcy on her. And that I find to be quite devilish. I don't think that's something we need to do. And I would like for everybody to question that as they read the novel.
Yes. So I found this book quite, I think I use this word with you, Sharmila, several times over. I found this a surprisingly troubling read. And maybe that's partly because of Elif Batuman saying, hilarious, I couldn't put it down. I'm sorry, I can't get over the blurbs.
And then a kid gets hit by a spade.
Yeah, it's just so... I found it quite a troubling read, and I found it troubling in no small part because of the character of Keiko herself and how I felt about her, which is that, yeah, I would not hang out with her. But I also recognize that my discomfort comes from her interrogation of normalcy, right? And the fact that I suppose I would belong in the category of people that she would think of as a normal, regular female, you know, and she uses that word, female, yeah. Which is also interesting. And that I think I would find her an uncomfortable being to be around. The fact that she kind of mixes and matches personalities based on where she is, the fact that, that there's a point where somebody tells her, you talk all the time like you're still in the convenience store. Even your facial expressions are odd. And I'm just thinking, man, if I had that in my life, I don't think I'd be as prescriptive as her friends and her family, I hope. But I recognize their frustrations with her. And I think that had me feeling uncomfortable with myself, I suppose, and how I think of normal, what normal consists of. So it was a complicated feeling.
Did we like the book, ultimately?
I think I did. I think I did enjoy the book for several reasons. First off, it's probably one of the few Japanese books out there with a very straightforward narrative. If you read any Japanese fiction at all, especially the literary stuff, you'll know that there is this tendency towards very elusive writing, a lot of imagery and things like that. So this was actually a very straightforward book. And maybe this is because this was written from Keiko's perspective. This is a first-person perspective. And so perhaps her character doesn't think about all these strange metaphors and what her life really means, because for her, it's just about being a convenience store worker. Yeah, I think I liked reading it. It's a very quick read. It almost feels as though it were a fable to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. But would I recommend it? Yes, I would. But would I read it again? I've already read it twice, so probably not.
I'm struggling with how much I liked it. I liked it enough to not want to put it down and to read it as fast as I could and get to the end. But again, something felt missing. Something felt like a letdown. Like, you know, you get to the end of the book and you're like, ah, is that it? Is that where we've come? And in a way, maybe that's the point of the book, that it's almost an ordinary life, being okay, being what it is, and finally not needing to be anything more. But as a reader, I don't know. I just felt like I wanted more from the book, a lot more.
So I enjoyed it intellectually a lot more than I did emotionally, I think is what it comes down to. Like you both, I think it was it's a nice read in the sense that it's written well, it moves along, and it presents a really interesting character, very intriguing character. But I don't think this is the book that I would pick up when I need something to read. I don't think this is the book I would pick up for comfort. I don't think I'm taking it on holiday. I would recommend it. However, I think it's a really interesting one to read and then mull over and, like this, talk about it with people. But beyond that, I would read what she writes next. I might not read this one again.
You know what I really did like about the book, though? I loved the convenience store. I don't know whether it's because we're reading it from Keiko's point of view, but also because the writer, Sayaka Murata, she does a great job of just explaining the minutiae of daily life in the store and just how it's like clockwork. Everything just moves like clockwork. And being a part of that, reading it, there's a weird kind of pleasure. You know, when she talks about the pleasures of a sound or a feel, I felt it too.
I think that comes from the lived experience of having been working in a convenience store for 18 years, which Sayaka Murata did, which is why that intimate knowledge of 3 o'clock, this is when we need to start pushing out the green tea. And, you know, it's just, it was very precise. I wondered whether, just in closing, I guess, whether can we read it just for what it is? And I think we were talking about this a bit earlier. Should we be reading this as an extended metaphor? Should we be reading this as if she is a real person with these specific feelings? I don't know.
Why are we not getting the sake mojito part of it? Is that what you're saying?
I think I'm talking about the distance, really. Yeah. You know, like, is this distance calculated? Should we be looking at this as a commentary on Japanese life? I recognize that it can be all of these things. But I'm just thinking primarily, is this a character study? Is this commentary? Is this, you know, what do we think it is?
If I had to pick, I'd say character study. I would say it feels like and that's why it feels like it's lacking something. It feels like it's an in-depth one person who's fascinating, and that's it.
I would actually take the opposite view and say it's a critique of Japanese society and the way it's structurally organized. But then again, you do run into some intellectual problems looking at it from that perspective.
Yeah, I'm going to cheat. And I think I sit somewhere in the middle because I don't think you can write somebody as specific. And she does go through some very emotional situations. I mean, she doesn't get herself emotional about it, but when you read it, you're like, dude, you are in an abusive situation. So there are things like that going on that are so specific that make it hard for me to read it as purely intellectual. But at the same time, I think you can't read it without looking at what it's trying to say about the Japanese obsession with marriage and conformity.
Yes.
And so it does all these things. It does it in 163 pages. It's a very interesting book. I have nothing else to offer beyond that. Really interesting.
I think worth reading just because it's also so small that really you can't lose. You can read it within a day, and I think it's a good read.
So at the end of all our musings, I guess, about Convenience Store Woman, we'd like to know whether you're planning to read it, or for that matter, whether you have read it, because as Min Han pointed out earlier, it's sold. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio and write to us at buythebook@bfm.my.
Now that brings us to footnotes, and because earlier we were talking about Sayaka Murata's Convenience Store Woman, which is a very, very Japanese novel, we thought we'd spend the next couple of minutes talking about Japanese literature in general, contemporary Japanese literature rather.
Well, I think this came up partly because when I first asked Min Han whether he'd be willing to come in and talk about it, and I asked, did you like the book? Your response was, I think, something to the effect of, yes, but I'm not sure why. Also, it's very Japanese. And I think that also just kind of sets the tone, because there is a Japanese flavor to books. I mean, when you're reading Japanese literature, I think someone could read you a page about a nameless character, and you might be able to identify this as set in Japan, written by a Japanese person. And what do you think that flavor is? I don't know quite what it encapsulates. Is it weirdness? Is it that sense of I don't know.
I think part of it for me is that so much of it is translated, and that translation creates a layer of
sameness,
in a way. Distance, I was going to say. And it might also be that Japanese writing in general does have that quality of distance. But I think the translation, which is why I think like an Ishiguro doesn't have that. He writes in English. It's not translated work. So versus a Murakami, where I always feel a sense of distance. I'm not a Murakami fan, so perhaps it's a little biased as well. And it's not a bad thing, that distance. But I always think distance when I think Japanese literature.
I think one of the things that I realize when I'm reading, or one of the things that identifies Japanese literature to me, is that they have a very different idea of what nuance means in writing. In a sense that their characters make very universal, very general statements all the time, and somehow this is accepted by everyone around them as truth, and this is somehow then transplanted into their specific situation. I don't think you get as much of this with your Western writers, where everyone hesitates to make huge declarative statements about the state of the world or the state of nature. And this is something that I find refreshing about Japanese literature. And actually, perhaps this might be true of Korean and Chinese literature as well, you know, writers from that part of the world.
You're right. Actually, I agree with that. Yeah, I do agree with that, that there is that sense of we are all. It just somehow, yeah, works downwards. Do you think that has to do with the homogeneity of those kinds of societies?
I think so. I mean, I think the Chinese, Korean, and the Japanese societies, they strive to a certain level of excellence that's universal to everyone.
So collectivist as well.
Absolutely.
Versus a more individualist Western perspective. I didn't think of that, but yes, now that you've mentioned it, I feel like I've got like examples popping up in my head all the time.
Yeah, I agree with that. I find Japanese literature interesting in no small part because of its minutiae. I think, you know, while we're talking about the specifics of convenience store woman and the ding ding and the irashimaisu, you know, just all that stuff, I do also find that in general, there is that quality in Japanese writing. Even when it comes to making allusions and you know, things of that nature, it tends to be highly specific and minute.
Yes.
And then the characters make broad declarative statements. And that combination together comes to create this kind of feel, I suppose, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, like Murakami always has this hole in the ground and a cat somewhere. And somehow these are representations of certain universal concepts.
Mm. And another thing that for me is, again, I don't know whether it's a product of the translation. I often wonder whether this is how real people in that culture speak to each other. Because it always feels like, and that has to do with a little bit of what you said, that declarative quality. I always find that people aren't necessarily speaking the way I would imagine them really speaking.
But I believe that is a function of the language. And that what happens when the language is translated. Because okay, I'm going to drop some Terrace House into by the book, which is not particularly relevant, except to say that when you watch like what is supposed to be regular interactions between daily Japanese people just kind of coming home and everybody's having a specific welcome home greeting, have you eaten yet? The fact that, you know, very often the first bite is accompanied by oishi, like just that sort of like, what's the word I'm looking for? Connectors? Those sorts of connective language that exists in daily Japanese interactions. I think that ends up, for people who don't speak Japanese, distancing us because we're like, do you have to? Oh, I see you do, because it's sort of normalized. And so I think whenever I re-enter or make the decision that I'm going to read a Japanese novel, it often involves a language adjustment in my head to acknowledge that you actually have to try and listen for what they're saying and not just read the sentence that is being written, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that. I actually find a lot of Japanese literature very frustrating for that very reason. I'm a reader who generally tends to like very definite meanings in my books. And although I know some degree of interpretation is required, Japanese literature can be frustrating because they can admit of so many different interpretations.
I also find myself frustratingly limited by the fact that so much of Japanese literature that's translated tends to be of the literary quality. I mean, watching anime, for instance, or even watching some of their soaps or dramas, I get the sense that there is a whole layer of casualness and real life and perhaps a very different idea of Japanese storytelling that I can't access because those books aren't translated. The kind of books that young people read or the kinds of books that people who don't consider themselves uppity or literary would read, I don't think I've read them.
Maybe people can tell us, especially if you are somebody who's a bit of a, is the word Japanophile?
Japanophile,
yeah,
yes.
I guess. You know, if it's something, if it's a culture that you really enjoy kind of dipping yourself into, what are we missing out on?
What books should we read that would tell us more about what Japanese literature is? You can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. You can write us at buythebook@bfm.my. Any final thoughts on Japanese literature before we close? Any recommendations, perhaps?
Well, not necessarily a recommendation, but just to pick up on your final discussion over there, there is this genre of Japanese writing called light novels, and they're generally not usually translated into English, but recently we have actually been seeing some of them make their way to our stores. And these light novels usually are associated with an anime or a manga as well. And I've read some of them, And they are perfectly delightful. I mean, they're not literary in the least. Well, I shouldn't say that, but they are very much less literary and they're very accessible. And I would recommend anyone interested in Japanese literature to check those out.
Perhaps we can have you back soon and we can discuss one of these light novels.
One that will actually be as intoxicating as a sake mojito, for God's sake.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Minhan.
Thank you.
You're listening to Buy the Book on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.